Blog Talk Radio.
Little Red Riding Hood. Let's start the story a different way. It was dark inside the wolf. Human beings are creative storytelling beings. They make art because that's what human beings do. As a writer, your goal is to keep your reader believing in your story, even though both of you know it's fiction. When I wrote The Handmaid's Tale, nothing went into it that had not happened in real life somewhere at some time. The reason I made that rule is that I didn't want anybody saying, you certainly have an evil imagination, you made up all these bad things. I didn't make them up. If you really do want to write and you're struggling to get started, you're afraid of something. Remember, it's only you and the page. The waste paper basket is your friend. It was invented for you by God. People are always coming up with new theories of the novel, but the main rule is, hold my attention. Any form of human creativity is a process of doing it and getting better at it. You become a writer by writing. There is no other way. So do it more. Do it better. Fail, fail better. Somewhere out there are the readers for your book. I'm Margaret Atwood, and this is my masterclass.
That was Margaret Atwood introducing us to her work and her views on the craft of writing. And I am Richard Weissman, and this is In Our Craft, or Sullen Art, and we are on the radio, Blog Talk Radio, on Late Night Poets, which is the largest group on allpoetry.com, which is the largest radio, which is the largest poetry site on the internet. So they tell me. And let me bring, I believe it's my co-host. Let's find out.
Hey, Richard.
There you are. Hey, how you doing, Neutron? You're back.
I'm back. Oh, man, we had some good poetry on the board for this week's episode, that's for sure. And that intro, that was fantastic.
Yeah, you know, most of them were really long, but I found this one where she was basically giving her views on writing for her masterclass, and I thought it was a nice intro to how she views the craft. So,
it was indeed.
I like how she, I like how she said everything that was in The Handmaid's Tale happened in history. So a little bit of foreshadowing, but my poem also was inspired by history because I'm kind of a history buff. And I know where she got different things from. Like the wall was in Florence, the Medicis used to hang their enemies on the wall. So There's a lot of history in her work, and testament to her as a researcher. Amazing stuff. So
yeah, even the failed debtor that you mentioned on the board, that was just fantastic.
Yeah, now
very pragmatic.
Actually, I will say that is a quote by Samuel Beckett, who's actually one of my favorite playwrights. So she did borrow that, which is okay. It's good to know that she's steeped in the canon. So, and how are you feeling?
I am feeling much better, much stronger.
Good.
Just had a little hospital trip in between, and the worst fever I've ever had in my life. But apparently, it wasn't COVID. So. Silver linings. Yeah. So I had like a two RAT tests and a PCR test as well, and it all came back negative. But it came on sudden and ended swiftly 3-4 days later. So I'm just very thankful that it wasn't COVID.
Yeah. Well, and me too. Yeah. Yeah, you're definitely integral part of what we do here every other Thursday. So it's good to have you back, and you were sorely missed.
Fighting fit too.
So it looks like it's just us, but we do have a lot of poetry. I don't know. I'll go ahead and turn it over to you if you'd like.
Certainly. So I thought E.J. Cool's poem would be a great place to start. So if we have a look at that, first is it should be SoundCloud loaded.
Yep. Let me pull it. I do see it. Okay, here it is.
Deflection by E.J. Cool. She's suffocating, oppressed, and suppressed by your unequivocal, self-righteous splendor. A passive blue sky for your morbidly obese hot air balloons of puffed-up pomposity. A gilded statuette sheathed by the dark, so your fool's gold errand of running the fucking universe can shine bright under cheap and lifeless white fluorescent light.
Wow. Thank you for the SoundCloud, EJ. So I will give you first word, Neutron. What'd you think?
Well, look, I thought it was brilliant. I think to give it a bit of context and things, it's just the two of us, we have time to do this today. The prompt that Emma wrote to was male fantasies. Male fantasies is everything run by male fantasies, up on a pedestal or down on your knees. It's all a male fantasy that you're strong enough to take what they dish out or else too weak to do anything about it. Even pretending you aren't catering to male fantasies is a male fantasy. Pretending you're unseen, pretending you have a life of your own, that you can wash your feet and comb your hair, unconscious of the ever-present watcher peering through the keyhole, in your own head, if nowhere else. You are a woman with a man inside watching a woman. You are your own voyeur. And that was from The Robber Bride by Margaret Atwood. Now, to the poem, scathingly brilliant and a strong social commentary throughout. And it takes the prompt and it runs with it so masterfully. I was drawn to this section here. So your fool's gold errand of running the fucking universe can shine bright under cheap and lifeless white fluorescent light. These words are so powerful. Domination. For what? Fool's gold, nonetheless. Pillaging the planet. This has a strong pulse throughout and blood runs free from the stone. You could read this quite literally or with the planet in mind, and man's conquest always seems to be at the behest of a minority. So I thought it was a very inspiring write and a great way to start the show tonight.
Absolutely. I like that you started the show poem by EJ, because I think it sets the tone, and I'm glad that she took up the prompt, because this is one of the longer prompts that I chose for the contest, and I honestly felt that doing a line or two of the prompt would destroy the integrity of the statement. Because if you read it in toto, then you see that it's almost like a perfect trap. You know, male fantasy, you try and get away from it, and that in and of itself is part of it, and it's just, there's no escape from it. I, too, was really touched by the portion that you mentioned there, Neutron. gilded statuette sheathed by the dark. So your fool's gold, Aaron, running the fucking universe, can shine bright under cheap and lifeless white fluorescent light. I thought there was so much pain and pathos embedded in this lyrical poem of oppression and struggle against the machine of male dominance. It was just excellent work. And I have to say that in the literal sense, woman as conquest, and then metaphor, the earth as a mother to be exploited. It just works on so many levels. So much is accomplished in three short stanzas, and just an excellent way to start our tribute to the work of Margaret Atwood. And let me just check. Yep, still just off, and that's okay. I like having a conversation about this stuff with you, Neutron.
Yeah, look, one other thing I'll add is, like, it's so true, and just that this Margaret Atwood statement. I'm so glad you gave it full kudos by printing it in full. Just the fact that it goes from the external to the internal with the lens through which you monitor your life, like even the way you paint your nails, do your hair, defy the acts of aging as a woman. It just both EJ and Margaret Atwood did very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I actually thought of all the prompts, and they were all strong, that was my favorite prompt, actually, prompt 8, because it does. It shows the perfect trap of a female oppression. You know, the perfect trap is the one that you don't realize you're in, you know, and that's really what's going on. So with that, I will turn it back to you for our next.
Okay, so we have a couple of carryovers from last fortnight's episode. So this one is by Blue Right 76. I'll give this one a read. And just a reminder that this was for prompt 1, the James Joyce Ulysses episode. And the prompt was, "History, Stephen said, is a nightmare from which I am trying to awake." And it goes like this. Digesting history, turning pages of history, digesting the offending postulates inspired by the call of clan glory that resonates with mine red blood-coded DNA, which pulls me into a quagmire of thoughts and pride. Yet as the heat tones down, the sensible tunes unfold as I question those that the frenzies whipped. But the bloodshed on those very pages that came before and after, I repeat humbly, yes, after every glory too, those 100 closets and cupboards that don't exactly hold the glory, douse the fervor for these history pages, those of mine and yours, my dear friends. Our forefathers unanimously lived a whole life of evolution through every revolution. But how much of the glory we hold on to isn't a criteria for our life today, but rather a evolution of peace and kinship. A simple example herein, studying a few maps of olden day empires, found them credited to the author behind who collected and drew innumerable maps, and then put them together to present a marvelous map preserved through a few centuries, every little hillock and lake spoke in detail of the enormous endeavor, not of a single skilled leader alone who extracted every innocuous detail, but those 100 or more men who worked on foot around a tropical nightmare of a place teeming with different wild animals, million diverse people of various customs under a humid and hot sun. These 100 or more would have been natives and simple colonial foreign laymen who who made a beautiful handshake to lay the map of a colonial empire to be ruled and reigned as hassle-free as humanly possible, who make history, the one who helms the war, or the ones who shed their lives, sacred blood. History tastes bitter with every step that takes me closer. And this is hopefully an inoffensive example, while there are a thousand more ready to place us on opposite sides of numerous debates. How much we let these might-bes and the might-have-beens hold on to our daily life interactions are the only question of the hour.
Nicely read there, Neutron. And we do have someone else in the green room. Let me bring them on.
Hey, guys. This is Mark. Mark Lippin. Just calling in.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for joining us. So, Mark, we're picking up where you left off on some James Joyce carryover. It's from 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you had a chance
to
hear that
one.
Yeah, it was a great
one.
Awesome. What'd you think?
Oh, it's just really timely, kind of beautifully written meditation on, you know, the old saying, history is created by the winners. This kind of elaborated on the theme, you know, all the myths we live by. You know, we're all arguing about it today, so it's really timely. But all the myths we live by, how things got built up, how civilizations got built up, and you know, like Washington was a slave owner, but he was one of the creators of this country. This poem goes into that territory of thinking about it, what it means, and talking about the winners were, you know, small groups of people who just dedicated themselves, they dominated a lot of other people and built something. And what's important is really, you know, it says it in one place, but how much of the glory we hold on to isn't a criteria for our life today, but rather an evolution of peace and kinship. So the history matters is how we are today.
Absolutely. Great comment.
Yeah,
I too really liked it. I especially liked that part, but the blood shed on those very pages that came before and after, I repeat humbly, yes, after every glory to those 100 closets and cupboards that don't exactly hold the glory, douse the fervor for these history pages. Those of mine and yours, my dear friends, our forefathers unanimously lived a whole life of evolution through every revolution, but how much of the glory we hold on to isn't a criteria for our life today, but rather an evolution of peace and kinship. I like how Blue Right 76 looks deeply into the question of awakening from the nightmare of history and remains hopeful despite our martial and clannish nature. But it was a thoughtful poem that hearkens us to listen to the angels of our better nature. Excellent. And Neutron, as our reader, I will give you final word.
Certainly. I have to agree with you there, Richard. It was a thought-provoking write. And as Mark mentioned, history, as they say, is written by the victors. And for my own 2 cents, ensconced in the pomp of the winners. It was a great answer to the prompt, which I mentioned earlier, history, Stephen said, is a nightmare from which I am trying to awake. But I have to question, especially with the goings-on in the world at the moment, will we awake from the ills of history, or are we instead doomed to repeat them? The part that resonated most was, who makes history, the one who helms the war, or the ones who shed their life's sacred blood? History tastes bitter with every step. I thought it was a great poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I think we're ready for our next one.
Okay, I'm trying to put it on the board now, but it's being interesting, so I'll just be a second, I'll refresh and try again. There we go, it's on the board.
Yep.
Please, can
is
I write?
Is it called Nervous?
That's the one. Richard, yep, would you be able to give that one a read?
Sure. Sounds great. Okay. So this is Nervous by Please Can I Write. Nervous. Did an extra check, then swung back until shoulders started to flinch and arms fling a little, knowing I couldn't fly if it goes wrong. The tender feet are locked in, but comfortably for me to look long at the cloud going by me side down with no hands, as to reach a time for blood to rush to my brain or over or to my thought of cloud couldn't be a name of a nebula or an individual, but briefly. Once I tilted for that emotionally, I went straight ahead, down on my head, brought it back up to eliminate that accident, somehow immediately reinforced, then how I didn't dismiss cloud's casualty, but cloud. I brush out one of my braids, like a cord to imagine even to one of my children, as Daisy naturally moved to memories, not memory, but the times of song growing berets, not jarring bars, and these continue, not banished from poetry for a scrapbook. But is a miscarriage a word to asterisk, not for more understanding, but wish to code what can make us weak, whereas I've osteoporosis showing blank can be entered into my bones. Reserve for a second sound tailoring, moments on a vibration plate, knowing it's not a way to count past. Bad luck by filling up to 14 when it's not 13 served up there. But draft, I get a deep breath rocking this to stanzas, how I can't use gravity on my front porch and stretch away on the side where children love to see shoveling for things. But going to write my poem, I see your chair is always too thin for the subject, but to eject until it's not for sit-down absorption, as to a rejoicing better than reabsorb bones to stick there. End of poem. And Neutron, if we could start with you.
Certainly. I have to, during the pre-commenting, I thought it had like a stream of consciousness vibe to it, and it was a very personal write. And I think that's why I leaned towards the stream of consciousness vibe. It was a great answer to the prompt, I fear those big words Stephen said, which makes us so unhappy. I love the imagery contained herein and the accessibility of the language, and it has a tenderness to it, particularly this section here, that is miscarriage a word to asterisk, not for more understanding, but wish to code what can make us weak, whereas I've osteoporosis, showing blank can be entered into my bones. For me, it almost shines a light on invisible afflictions or illnesses and gives a certain understanding to it, which most people, unless they've been afflicted by it, wouldn't necessarily understand themselves. So I thought it was a very good write.
That's a really interesting take on it. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I really like this one too. But comfortably for me to look long at the clouds going by me upside down with no hands, as to reach a time for blood to rush to my brain over or to my thought of cloud couldn't be a name of a nebula for an individual, but briefly. And it had a wonderfully Joycean stream of consciousness vibe to it. The voice has an authenticity, which made me wonder if this was recorded. In other words, if that's how it was derived, because I used to do that back in the 90s. I used to actually just do first thought, best thought into a tape recorder and then write down what came out later on. But at any rate, I thought that the poet created some laudable work here, and very, very well done. And Mark, I'm going to give you final word.
Yeah, the stream of consciousness, and it's a really interesting poem. You know, it's kind of reticent in some ways about what's occurring. It's but clearly there's some sort of fall here, stream of consciousness, which is associated with just a thought process, blood rushing to my brain, just 10 feet locked in. It's you know, almost like a parachute fall or something like that through the clouds as an experience, but as a metaphor for consciousness too. And the nervous is, it's almost like falling through life or something like that is what I thought was going on. And it's a very kind of interesting, I don't know, phrasing, images kind of interwoven together, and kind of moving. It's there's a lot of emotion felt here. But is miscarriage a word to Asterisk, not for more understanding, but wish to code what can make us weak? These are all the big words, miscarriage in the prompt, osteoporosis, as the things we have, that occur through life. So it's just this falling in this kind of stream of consciousness void is what I got out of it, and just kind of meditation of the things that occur in life. It's a very lovely and interesting poem, one that would bear a lot of rereading. It's beautifully done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And now, Mark, I know you have a poem on the board. Do you need to kind of read and run? Do you have time?
A little. Well, I'll eventually probably can't stay for the whole show, though I'd like to be up early. But yeah, anytime, you know, I could read it now and hang around for a bit, or do something, or read it a little later, whatever you would like.
Okay. Okay.
I will get the poem.
No hurry.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Okay,
there we go. Mark, when you're ready.
All righty. Let's see. I guess we need to refresh. Oh, there we go. All right. So this is a prompt that really appealed to me. Don't let the bastards grind you down. You know. Something one should always do. Anyway, the poem's Hamburger Pie. I don't know why, without cause, you ripped me with your 6-inch claws. Very thoughtless, but I suspect it's only a comical effect. Me is a drooping hamburger pile, with, however, my usual smile. I really can't be bothered to take seriously. People do. If they want to get into killing me, I'll find some other way to be. Float apart as a ghost, accepting what you are, almost. Mother, what? What's that you said? All the other MFs are dead. It's only me who now listens while you validate your existence. Enjoy your self-assertion, dude. My revenge won't get annoyed.
Great one, Mark. So, yeah, I especially liked Mother What? What's that you said? All the other MFs are dead. There's only me. He now listens while you validate your existence. Enjoy your self-assertion void. My revenge won't get annoyed. And as we're going to see, as the evening progresses, there's a lot of heavy poetry. So this was a really nice change of pace, humorous, giving us just a different flavor for the night, as opposed to much of the work of the evening, which is heavy dystopian. So much appreciated. Very well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I'm going to start with my favorite part. I don't know why, without claws, you root to me with your 6-inch claws, very thoughtless, but I suspect it's only a comical effect. Me as a drooping hamburger pal with however my usual smile. I thought this was great. And just for my 2 cents, isn't it almost always the way that someone with an axe to pick picks some unassuming innocent? But I've learned myself on both sides of the coin, you have to be careful they don't sink their claws back in themselves. I've been on the receiving end of such stupidity and insensitivity and chosen to not let the bastards grind me down. So I thought it was a great answer to the prompt, and I love the tongue-in-cheek humour and agree with Richard wholeheartedly. This is a change of pace, but I always find there's one person that runs with a prompt in an unexpected manner, and this is it for me. So well done.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, Neutron, where are we going?
All right. So I just had to check I wasn't on mute. We're going to get Mamuel's poem up next, and I'll just I might give this one a read. I'm just making sure. Yeah, there's no SoundCloud. Okay, so this is called Hush and Shush by Mamuel. Hide in the tall grass. Camouflage yourself. Lie down. Don't make a sound. Don't even think. They can hear you, your thoughts. Every sordid detail, every morbid fantasy, hide quickly. You're getting closer. Sit beside me. Hold my hand. Stay quiet. Stay still. Empty your mind. Your thoughts are screaming loud as klaxons. I can hear them in my head. Hush and shush or we'll be found. Every thought of murder, every thought of adultery, every thought of lust, every thought of avarice, all 7 sins running in our minds, they can see it, sense it, and if we are found thinking, it will be the end of us. So keep your mind blank, hide in the tall grass, be a scarecrow, head full of thatch, and we might still live one more day. End of poem.
Nicely done there, Neutron. And Mark, if we can start with you.
Yeah, this is a lovely poem. I love the language. It just is direct, strong poetry. So well written. Hide in the tall grass, camouflage yourself, lie down, don't make a sound, don't even think. That's just beautiful. It's kind of sparse, strong poetry. I love the whole poem. It flowed like that. And I'm struck by the anxiety. We're getting some anxious poems tonight. the fall poem, the one before, and then the other one. And this is, and maybe that's the tenor of the prompts, but this is one about just kind of an existential anxiety, we're in life and they're looking for us, they're judging us. And we feel this pressure to hide, and just kind of go low profile and non-conspicuous, and hide from others. That's just what life can sometimes do to us. So this poem presents a beautiful metaphor in that, hiding in the tall grass. Lovely poem.
Absolutely, great comment. Yep, I too really like this one, especially, so keep your mind blank, hide in the tall grass, be a scarecrow, head full of thatch, and we might still live one more day. I love how she riffed off the prompt, taking us inside the minds of those living in a dystopian nightmare where thoughts can be heard. I thought it was a very strong offering. Well, very well done. And Neutron, as our reader, I'm going to give you a final word on this piece.
Certainly. I thought it was a great answer to the prompt. If we were all on trial for our thoughts, we would all be hanged. From Alias Grace by Margaret Atwood. When I was really unwell, I became that scarecrow in the last stanza for fear that my thoughts were on display. So this poem really resonates with me. Giving voice to my thoughts through writing gave me power over my head to a degree. The part I was drawn to was, your thoughts are screaming loud as klaxons. I can hear them in my head. Hush and shush or will be found. Every thought of murder, every thought of adultery, every thought of lust, every thought of avarice. Inspiring. On the second read, it actually reminded me of something I saw on social media this week about Marcel Marceau, saving the children by entertaining them, keeping them quiet and getting them out of Nazi Germany. So I think it was a brilliant write and very inspiring.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, and I'm turning it back to you now.
Thanks, Richard. Look, I'm going to get your poem up next. I think it encapsulated a lot of the prompts from the Handmaid's Tale. And if you want to give us an introduction and a read, that would be great.
Sure, yeah. So as opposed to just picking one prompt, I applauded, first of all, your choice when you wanted to do an evening of Margaret Atwood, because she appeals to me on lots of levels. Just first of all, as a researcher, as a historian, and then also as someone writing of living under a totalitarian, dystopian, nightmare world. And So I wanted to kind of try to capture what that dystopian world actually felt like from the subjective first-person singular. And so I wrote a poem called Under His Eye. They were watching the eye, human, electronic, and divine, our whispers to each other. We're no safer than shouts. Blood trickled down my red woolen draped thigh. Blessed be the fruit, reminding me of my red gloved luck, now dripping full length of my crimson dress, past tattooed ankles, to finally rest on flat-heeled red shoes to save the spine. I lift my gaze with these damned white wings like horse blinders cut my peripheral vision to prevent us from seeing, but also from being seen. Even our own, the aunts, donning their modest brown clothing and cattle prod belts, along with the barren wives dressed in varying shades of teal, had betrayed us. Yet they too were prisoners, like the Jewish Sonderkommandos of Nazi death camp days, now pinning my knees. May the Lord open behind her bloodless ankles, while the commander performed the Lord's work, and 9 months after, orchestrating my birth, then feeding my daughter. Give me children or else I will die, though I couldn't, so I wouldn't suicide. So I'd always live, always hope for her rescue, for reunion, even if it was only under his eye. End of poem.
Great read, Richard. I was particularly ensconced with the last stanza, so I wouldn't, no, I couldn't suicide, so I'd always live, always hope for her rescue, for reunion, even if it was only under his eye. I thought it was a deeply dark, nuanced rite, and it speaks of the complicity of some and the prisoners presiding beneath the commander. It was harrowing and gritty, and also spoke to the dystopian themes contained within the novel The Handmaid's Tale. So very well done. And, no worries. And Mark, what were your thoughts?
I just was kind of mesmerized by, you know, the deep emotion in this, you know, in this, you know, compelling language. And it was the second stanza, you know, rapes occurring here is what I took from it. The blood, you know, the aftermath of a rape, blood trickled down my thighs, blessed be the fruit, reminded, you know, all the way down. Just that whole passage in the second stanza is kind of mesmerizing, and kind of blood flows down after what I took to be a rape in the most horrible. It's hard to imagine a worse situation on earth than this one, to be in this kind of concentration camp and to undergo this experience where even those in prison being you are complicit. And what was, when really the thing that where the poem was really deep is that, you know, the rape leads to a daughter the 9 months later, and the woman, even in spite of these horrible circumstances under the eye and the fact it was a rape, I guess, you know, is what I interpreted as, and in worst possible circumstances, she so wanted her child. That's all she could think about. I mean, tied to the biblical reference, Rachel. You know, that was just very deep emotion. This is so original and so emotional. Like, I just love this poem.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, so where would you like to go now, Nicole?
Okay, well, Mark, if you could read Sidney Pierce's poem, Cherry Pie, that would be great.
Sure. Okay, let's see. Okay, we got it. Cherry Pie. Somewhere beyond a closed door, there is a scent of warm cherry pie. It will be eaten with vanilla ice cream and regurgitated back into a porcelain throne by the same woman who made it. She will pretend it never happened and bake another next week at the same time with a smile on her face and an ulcer in her stomach, because the American dream waits for no one. She will take the pills prescribed to her and wash them down with vodka until she forgets that she has spent her entire life trapped under a shingled roof with people who don't even know her favorite color. And
nicely read there, Mark. Nutrana, if we could start with you, what'd you pick?
I think Sydney has a knack for storytelling, and I'm really impressed with the read that Mark gave it. It did it justice. With all its grit and nuance, Sydney cut right to the core of the prompt and laid bare the American dream. But these days it could equally apply elsewhere in the world, especially Australia, where conditions to look, feel, and act a certain way to get by, lest we be ostracized. This part here really cut deep. She will take the pills prescribed to her and wash them down with vodka until she forgets that she has spent her entire life trapped under a shingled roof with people who don't even know her favorite color. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, that same part really struck me as well. So I won't read it again because you just read it, but I will say that I was very impressed how much was accomplished in this brevity. We all talk about showing, not telling, and she truly shows us what it is to be a rat trapped in a maze. I thought there was tremendous pathos in this brevity about social pressures, alienation, and mental dis-ease. Very strong offering, strong riffing off of the poem. And Mark, as our reader, I will give you final word. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with UN Neutron is just pretty compelling. This image of somebody trapped in a loveless routine, doing, I guess, in domestic situation, doing these tasks and doing the things of a material life, baking the cake, eating it, looks like throwing it up again, regurgitated back into a porcelain throne, and just kind of numbing herself with this domestic routine, surrounded by loveless people, and taking pills and vodka. It's a slow path to the destruction described here. It's really moving, really well done. In our society, if you aren't connected to other people, this is what happens, is what the poem's saying. It's a very strong emotion.
Excellent comments. And with that, I'm turning it back to Neutron.
Thanks. I'm going to sneak my poem in here. This one was written to prompt 7, which was one of our more popular prompts tonight. Perhaps I write for no one, perhaps for the same person children are writing for when they scrawl their names in the snow. And it's called Binary Existence. Attending the local district police open day, my slender fingers were dipped in ink and printed for perpetuity. I recollect the tiny human hands and feet of my newborn brother dipped in plaster that set like pyrite, the earmarks on the paint of my elderly neighbor's yellowed walls that dictated the growth of pudgy children that had since grown taller and lankier, their eyes dark, no longer in his life. The marks remained awaiting his inheritance. Concentric circles of an oak tree expand and contract with the passing of each season, felled for the wooden floorboards that lined the rustic bars I haunted, peanut shells strewn across the floor like a homicidal crime scene marking out the corpses after one too many cognacs. Much like my words that seep through binary existence traipsing across the globe, in a series of ones and zeros, I write for all, I write for none, leveraging words like an anchor. End poem.
Great read there, Neutron. Mark, I'm going to give you first word.
I love the whole poem. I'm fixated on the last line, Neutron. Poetry. I write for one, I write for none. I mean, I write for all, I write for none. Leveraging words like an anchor. That's a real statement. And just the feeling of the feeling expressed here of just being in life and growing through life, and it's organic, it's, children growing, the tree rings building up, just involved in the binary existence that's described, a pattern of one and zeros, and that's all software which runs our society now is a pattern of ones and zeros. And our life's like that, this kind of organically shaped pattern that builds up and leaves you. In this poem, it seems like you're not sure where, but you know what the poet is really aware of what's happening. And again, I go back to that concluding phrase, I write for all, I write for none, leveraging words like an anchor. Because in this poem space, that is the anchor, the act of writing. Lovely poem.
Great. Great insight there, Mark. Yeah, I love this piece, Neutron. It was just so different. Much like my words that seep through binary existence traipsing across the globe in a series of ones and zeros, I write for all, I write for none, leveraging words like an anchor. And you always have a unique voice, but this one in particular really struck me as very different, very, you know, very innovative, emotive, full of pathos, with words that cut till we bleed with you. And just a pleasure to read. Great work. I was almost speechless, actually, and I read it a couple of times just to make sure I got the full effect of what I thought, at least, you were trying to convey. Because it was very, very layered, I thought. So, excellent.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin.
Absolutely.
Next, we've got a poem by Daniel Duchino. I'm just going to check if there is a note. Richard, would you be able to give this one a read, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so this is Daniel Duchino, called Myth of Adulthood. And this is inspired by prompt 2. So just so we're all on the same page here, prompt 2 is, here it is. Another belief of mine that everyone else my age is an adult, whereas I am merely in disguise. And that's Margaret Atwood Cassatt. So this is Myth of Adulthood. Perception is an endless growing hallway lined with fractal dividing doors, and we all run the hallways as children of children, sprinting for destiny from the doorways we choose. And desire for more rooms to enter only brings that mythical childhood zen. To learn, to grow, to play, to hypnotize from wonderment, and illuminate as energy until the spark falls from light. End of poem. And Neutron, what were your thoughts on that one?
I love, firstly, the quote by Margaret Atwood. You almost get this sense of an imposter syndrome. And I think that Daniel did really well in answering the prompt's call. I enjoyed the powerful nature of this brevity, and it had such a strong opening stanza. Perception is an endless growing hallway lined with fractal dividing doors, and we all run the hallways as children of children, sprinting for destiny from the doorways we choose. It almost brings to mind a deterministic future. Fate would have us leaving one door and entering another. Then you lead onto the next stanza, or rather Daniel did, and brings home that transition to adulthood. And for me, it reminds me of that loss of imagination and the want for more, always more, that empty cup that we fill with externalities. Very well done.
Wow, great insight. And Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, I just love that first stanza too, but I will repeat it again. Kind of again, life is development, exploration, and the wonderment of that. This brings that back, the, you know, childhood growth. But I thought, you know, it even went beyond that, you know, the running through the labyrinth of life, finding new revelations and openings, and the final stanza, to learn, to grow, to play, to hypnotize from wonderment, and illuminate as energy, and just the kind of ignition of involvement and joy in life. And the last line is kind of interestingly ambiguous, and until the spark falls from light, because, like, that's the ignition of consciousness and awareness in the world, or, you know, maybe kind of, you know, the end too, you know, death. It's left a little bit ambiguous to me. The and the poem's all about kind of this hypnotic wondering engagement as one lives and lives ahead. Very different, actually. You know, differently written, very original. You know, beautiful.
Excellent comment, yeah. Yeah, I too really liked that, that portion that you had both alluded to. The hallways as children of children sprinting to destiny from the doorway she used. That was a deeply spiritual write on the nature of the human condition, on the inner child who runs the hallways as children of children springing, sprinting from destiny from doorways to choose. Deeply philosophical and emotionally satisfying too. Very strong. And with that, we can turn to our next one. Where do you want to go?
So I've got a poem here by Keith Palethorpe. And Mark, if you could read it, that would be great.
Sure. Use Every Man, Thoughts to Be Hanged. It's the title, Thoughts to Be Hanged. Use every man after his desert, and who shall escape whipping? Use them after your own honor and dignity. The less they deserved, the more merit is in your bounty. Thus spake the bard for all times and places. But here, within the private preserve of my mind, I am more than king. I am God. My word is not just law. It is all. Here, in my private prison, there are no rules but mine. There are no boundaries but of my making. The world of mind is my soul stage, where I play the philosopher and the fool. But I write all the parts. End of thing.
Great read there, Mark. Yeah, I love this one. It had this Shakespearean tone, quite satisfying. The musicality shines bright, highlighting the theme of egocentricity. And I thought it was very nicely done. And I like Keith's response to my comment. He said, the Pointlander is the penultimate narcissist because the Donald is the ultimate. Yeah. So, and who can argue with that? and Neutron, what'd you think?
I thought it danced with the prompt very well indeed. Just for our listeners, it was for if we were all on trial for our thoughts, we would all be hanged. And this part here resonated. I'll read it in one moment. We are, in fact, prisoners of our own mind. All we can do is try and live with ourselves as best we can. So the idea of the mind being synonymous with a prison was being an astute. And this is my favorite section here. But here, within the private preserve of my mind, I am more than king. I am God. My word is not just law. It is all. Here in my private prison, there are no rules but mine. And just following on from Richard's comment, on second read, it actually reminded me of this play I studied in high school, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, by Tom Stoppard. And it took two of the more humorous characters and created an entire play based on that. And the reason I mention that is just these last two lines here where I play the philosopher and the fool, but I write all the parts. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. I love that play, by the way. One of my favorites. And Mark, as reader, I will give you final word.
This is a very eloquent poem, very clearly and strongly written. And I just love the way it progressed. In this first stanza saying we're all fallible creatures and we kind of interact, and in a way we're you know, part of you know, on a stage in some sense, that the bard in this case describes. And then it goes internally, and it's what's there is like an act of recreation. It's almost like writing about that context. As poets, we go internal, and we play. I love that second to last line, where I play the philosopher and the fool. I mean, we're basically recreating, you know, the whole human condition in our own mind, playing all the parts and writing them down and creating the poems and plays that we do. So I thought it's kind of a lovely transition between the first and second stanza, and just ended up in the act of self-focus, the act of creation at the end. About all we go through and all this thing. Lovely thing.
Excellent comment there, Mark. Okay, and with that one, we are ready to go to our next.
Okay, so the next one is by S. Sharp, and I believe there is a SoundCloud.
There it is. Let me go ahead. Yep, let me go ahead and play it.
The Hangman's Tree. Our thoughts we water, foster, and grow. Limbs sprawl, reaching for sunlight. Roots penetrate deeply, stealing minerals from others. Over time, we etch our names in the trunk, a heart, a declaration of love. The harsh extremes of the seasons unfold. Year by year, rings are counted in deep-seated beliefs. Sap oozes out diseases of our prejudices. Where the outer world builds the gallows, a rope across the sturdiest of limbs awaits. Jacques Callas, the hangman's tree. The jury's rope, the verdict is in. We shall all hang for our convictions.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Scott. If we can start comments off with you, Mark, what do you think?
You know, just very, very interesting, compelling poem about just the metaphor, how we grow up, reaching for sunlight. We are the trees, growing. Contending, stealing minerals, you know, roots penetrate. We reach for sunlight, so our roots sink into life, into the earth, and we steal minerals from others. He's writing about the human condition, how we compete, how we, you know, love, how we try to etch our names in the trunk, and the rings build up. He's talking about the life and the terrible irony at the end. Suddenly it's almost as if our tree-like growth transforms into a hangman tree, that we're guilty of having been alive, and that Atwood thought about how we all end up, we'd all be hanged for our beliefs, but just the fact we're human and that we do certain things that aren't exactly idealistic, and we kind of create our own progress, and we end up, guilty and being punished for it in various ways. It's part of the human condition. That's what this says to me anyway. And very clever in a very strong and deeply thought out way. I really like this one.
Absolutely, yeah, I totally agree. I thought this was a great offering. And just like you caught, Mark, I thought the metaphor was wonderful. Very clever wordplay, punctuating that strong offering on thought crimes and thought criminals. This is another one inspired by that prompt, if we were all in trial for our thoughts. we were on, all on trial for thefts, we would all be hanged. And I especially liked year by year, rings are counted in deep sea belief. Sap oozes out the users of our prisoners, so the outer world fills the gallows. A rope across the sturdiest limbs. Oh, wait. Pardon me, voice is going a little bit. But yeah, it's a real strong offering. And Neutron, I'll give you final word on this one.
Yeah, I thought it was a dark offering for the dystopian prompts from Margaret Atwood. I have to agree with you both there as far as the extended metaphor. It seems to move from the internal rings of the tree to our minds at the outer and the externalities that would see us hang for our convictions on a strong bough. I remember hearing of a lady who collected jars of dirt from lynching sites in the southern states of the U.S., and it reminded me that not all are allies, but there are some, and we need to expel the ooze of prejudice and relate to one another on a human level. So I really respected the comment from you, Mark, in relation to it is almost a poem about the human condition, and one would hope that we rise above. And Richard, I was drawn to the same section you were. I won't read it again, but I thought in whole it was an amazing poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. And where would you like to go next?
Okay, so we've got Weaver of Dreams, and there should be a SoundCloud.
There is. Hold on, let me pull it up.
A drawing lay on the mat. Red roses, so lifelike I could see drops of dew on the petals. In flowing copper plate was written, I know the thought of flowers being picked hurts your heart. This is an age memoir. Please keep it with you always. Yesterday there was a bird, drawn with beak open, musical notes floating from its tiny throat. The music was from The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams, and written were the words, see this and hear me always. The flowers and music were breaking down the wall I'd built. I had to know who was bombarding my citadel, so in my best copper plate I wrote a note. You have my mind, my soul, you may soon have my heart, please not next time. I opened the door and filled with excitement, I left it on the mat.
Wow, that was another excellent SoundCloud. I had to know who was bombarding my citadel. So in my best copper plate, I wrote a note. You have my mind, my soul, you may soon have my heart. Please not next time. I opened the door and filled with excitement, I left it on the mat. I thought it was a thoughtful expose of ignorance and the heavy price we pay for isolation, alienation. The pace, though, pervades, but the ending is hopeful. Sounds like she's willing to be vulnerable, to let love in the door, if only it will knock. Beautiful storytelling there as well. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually listened to The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams whilst reading the poem, and it was ethereal and forlorn and hopeful at the same time. Much like Weaver of Dreams' poem. It was nuanced, romantic, and as you pointed out, Richard, it had a level of vulnerability to it. My favorite part, the flowers and music were breaking down the walls I'd built. I had to know who was bombarding my citadel, so on my best copper plate I wrote a note. On a personal level, here's to those walls breaking down, and your heart being free of the thorns adorning roses that can wrap tightly, and I hope we may all love again.
Amen. and Mark, I'm going to give you final word on this one.
This was a wonderful poem. It was so romantic, but it wasn't the romantic of some soft haze filling the brain. It was kind of, you know, just an adult feeling. I saw it as the recognition of another mind, these gifts and clues. It's like catching clues in another person, another personality, and being woke up emotionally and physically by the sense of connection, you know, the gifts, the statements. And I just love the way the poet read it. It's just beautifully read. You have my mind, my soul, you may soon have my heart. It's like so highly romantic. It's so adult in the way it's said, you know, just the kind of wanting and the clarity of statement, the frankness of wanting, the kind of romantic recognition of another. I just thought it was unusual. It was beautifully read and beautifully written. Holy poem.
Excellent comment. And with that, where would you like to go next, Neutron?
Okay, so I have a poem by A. Johnson. And Richard, if you could read this one, that would be great.
Absolutely, yeah, and I did a cough drop, so my voice should be back. Okay, so this is by A. Johnson, and it's called There Was No Art or Craft to Speak Of. Before you, there was no art or craft to speak of. There was nothing to kiss or hold. Within the awkward arms and words of me, you're all I've ever known. In the keep and still of night, when your hands are touching me, when deer are feeding on apples behind the low stone wall, when the moon has pulled the stars down the river, let me kiss you in the garden among the tall first flowers, in my bed late at night. I study the dark and indisputable art of you, the mountains, the rivers, the geography of my desire. I hardly know what to do with my useless, pungent words, my mistakes and missteps. You are beyond beauty, beyond belief. You are the answer, the filament, the stigma, and style of me. All my knowing, all my imagining, even when I forget, when I am indecipherable, I fall back into the ground, the earth, the root of me. End of poem. And Mark, if we can start with you, what do you think?
I love the fixation, because that would that's what it was, the contemplation of the loved one, and the beauty, the deep thought, the images, the geography of the loved one beyond all beauty, the focus of imagining. It's like the poet loses themselves in the other, and it's deliberate. That's the way they want, what they want. The poet's body almost gets dissolved, the awkward arms and words of me. That's pretty striking language. It's like so focused that forgetfulness of self, just the longing for union, the leaning toward unit, union, and the self-forgetfulness, you know, even when I forget, when I'm indecipherable, I fall back into the ground, the root, the root of you. It's very original, very striking description of when love can be an obsession, as it is here. Lovely poem.
Excellent comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, firstly, I just have to say I'm very impressed when people are able to write to multiple prompts. So this was actually written to prompt number 5, when we think of the past, it's the beautiful things we pick out. Prompt number 7, I write for no one, perhaps the same person children are writing for when they scrawl their names in the snow. And also prompt 14, if it's a story I'm telling, then I have control over the ending I must be telling to someone. There's a gentle romanticism to the words and imagery contained in this poem, and I particularly liked when deer are feeding on apples behind the low stone wall, when the moon has pulled the stars down the river, let me kiss you in the garden amongst the tall first flowers. There is beauty in this rite, firmly grounded in nature as a metaphor. Very well done.
Absolutely. Excellent comment. And I, too, really love this. And by the way, I had to give a nod to the fact that they used the title of our show, Crafts and or Art. So that was clever, right?
That was funny.
Clever
I just
well. Yep. And it didn't escape me, too, that, you know, that our show, of course, is named after a Dylan Thomas line, and Thomas is probably the master of poetic lyricism. And this had that beautiful lyricism throughout, and intense imagery. Just a beautiful poem, and pleasure to read. The words kind of just melt in your mouth. And yeah, like you said, Neutron, that ability to pull multiple prompts together so seamlessly and you know, turn it into a cohesive poem was not lost on me. So excellent writing, very clever, very well done. Okay, where would you like to go next?
Well, I'm just wondering if, Mark, if you have time to hang around a bit longer and read Thomas's poem, Thomas B.
Yeah, I'll do that and then probably say goodnight. Lovely poem, so it's incredible, actually, and how strong they are.
Absolutely. Thank you so much
I'll
for calling,
Thomas.
Mark.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'll read
appreciate
Thomas
it.
More. And thank you guys for having me, and I'm just so impressed by the poems tonight. Well, I think all three of us can see it, you know, how strong and the talent here. So I'll read Tom's poem. The Notes from a Father. The scope of your freedom is determined by your ability to take advantage of the opportunities that surround you. Your intelligence defines itself in its ability to see opportunities others did not even know existed. We live in a house of mirrors, reflections of how it has always been done, what others expect, all the supposed to's, shoulds, layer after layer of cultural predetermined action. For some, it is a blanket of comfort. They survive by castigating anyone who would hog the covers or live without them. Too many are drowned without a whimper, no more than a statistic of loss, a number of bodies that fell overboard. Measure your course. Would you travel it again? Where you have been is where you have learned. If the choices you made were the best possible, given what you knew at the time, supported your values, then the cage you live in has no locks, and its limits are of your choosing. Freedom is a funny word. It says you're at choice, but to keep your word, to honor what you've created. Many of your choices are already made. Yet, without a sense of being free to choose again and again, the life you live feels as if you can never win. May your vessel be strong. your sails full and blessed with wind. When storms come and you are blown off course, may you always have the strength to return to your loves. End of poem.
Excellent read, Mark. So I know you have to run, but I was wondering if you wanted to give a comment on this poem before you left.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'll leave after this, guys, would like to give a comment. This is just such strong, thoughtful language, and it's so well written, and it's so true, and it's very, very realistic, which might incline to a pessimistic direction, but it's not. It's basically on the way it comes across, on strong experience, on deep thought about life, the thoughtful lessons learned of what's presented here, and they basically say, I love that phrase, freedom is a funny word. You know, you can, it's your choice, basically, to make what you want of it. And just the way Tom describes it, it's not just a statement. The whole language of sentences basically kind of almost instruct you on what you have in your life to come, whatever stage you are. I mean, because you are free, and if you know how to take freedom and look for the opportunity in it, then you can move forward. And I love the blessing at the end. May your vessel be strong, your sails full and blessed with wind. That was just beautiful poetry to conclude, a really beautiful poem. Very strong.
Absolutely great comments. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I'm going to start with my favorite part. They survive by castigating anyone who would hog the covers or live without them. Too many are drowned without a whimper, no more than a statistic of loss, a number of bodies that fell overboard. I feel like we live in a throwaway culture at times, material possessions, people, you name it. I have a friend doing it hard at the moment, and that message really resonated. I think Thomas has a way of running with a prompt and infusing his life experiences and lessons in a nuanced manner. They're never slap in the face. They're always just multi-layered and have a sense of sage wisdom to them. I really enjoy when Thomas submits for our contests, as they are always very thought-provoking writes, and in this case, his thoughts on freedom were particularly illuminating. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really love this piece. My favorite part, measure your course. Would you travel it again? Where you have been is where you have learned. If the choices you made were the best possible, given what you knew at the time, supported your values, then the cage you live in has no law, and its limits are of your choosing. And I love how he turned that prompt on its head and showed the flip side of it, how the cage you live in has no law, and its limits are of your choosing, because you're taking control based upon the choices that you have at that moment in your life. And I just in general love the Polonius-like advice regarding life choices, freedom, and meaning, purpose. Very nicely done. And I wanted just to take this moment to thank Mark for joining us. Always great to have his insights and his very generous comments. Very much appreciated. And with that, Neutron, I am turning it back to you for our next piece.
Great. So the next one, I'll give a read. I'm just going to double check there's no SoundCloud. So this was inspired by one of our more popular quotes tonight, "Perhaps I write for no one, perhaps for the same person children are writing for when they scroll their names in the snow. And it's by Jack Blue, and it's called A Cat's Purveying. The tragedy of silent spring didn't capture any fool drinking nectar from the source in search of human provenance when the trauma faded out deep below the shiny screen. Lacrimosely, a shroud of snow covered all the holy earth that used to sing in evergreen, or should be shining emerald with the oceanic best, waving bright in sapphire. Meowing, morendo, adagio, and bleakly pianissimo, I took a little fallen branch and began to write a note on the empty snowy page of the silent earthly book. May the ancient fairyland buried under banshee's spree be soon back to Mother Earth, if the twilight blue of snow mirrors all the nuances of the great primordial sea. A raven's empty monologue sounded like reality. The snowy blossoms faded in. End poem.
Excellent read there, Neutron. Yeah, I love this piece. Oh my gosh. Maybe ancient fairyland buried under the banshee's spring be soon back to Mother Earth. If the twilight blue of snow mirrors all the nuances of the great primordial sea, a raven's empty monologue sounded like reality. The snow blossoms fade again. Wow. What a beautiful lyrical poem of existential querying, reminiscent of Shakespeare's Sound and Fury. Quite a poem. Kind of melted in the mouth when intoned aloud, almost like an invocation. Nicely done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I just thought this was a fantastic answer to the prompt. I was very impressed with Jack's use of vivid imagery and language. It was a very strong write, in my opinion. And as you said, melted from the mouth. It was just such a pleasure to read. I was drawn to this section here. Lacrimosely, a shroud of snow covered all the holy earth that used to sing in evergreen or should be shining emerald within the oceanic face, waving bright in sapphire. I think he took the prompt to another realm and ran with it. The vocabulary was extensive, but not to the point that it was inaccessible, and it flowed really well, the whole piece. Very well done.
Absolutely, yeah, great comment. Okay, where would you like to go next?
All right, let's have a look what we have in our little box here. So I've got another poem by Scott Sharp, S. Sharp, The Human mm-hmm. Library Project. I'm just going to double check if there was a SoundCloud for this one too. I believe there was. I'm just not sure if it was loaded.
Yep, I think I got it.
Awesome.
Yep, here it goes.
The Human Library Project, Denmark. The books are living, breathing, published human beings out from the tomes, more valuable than those at Ashurbanipal or Alexandria, where history walks from the shadows into the light. Aftalus, the inventor of dialogue, smiles upon the conversations in humanity. These books are different, truly living. They breathe and take in the same air as you and I. Their knowledge is as vast as the shimmer in the night sky, as winding, persistent, and full of life as the Nile, nurturing everything around them with beauty and sustenance. And like all great books, their covers are worn, spines giving out, pages torn, but their stories are vibrant tales of what we are. These books walk from the back rooms, sit with you at your table, turning the pages of their lives, survivors, stereotyped characters having dialogue with you, an alcoholic washed ashore from the rough seas of addiction, sits on the shore staring back at the storms of the sea. An autistic man reveals his hopes of love, real love, from a woman that sees the mountains in life that he has climbed. Kilimanjaro, Elbrus are just bumps in his mind. Everest is the love he someday hopes to find. Or turn the pages of a bipolar woman, delve into the caverns with her, the underground, where her demons are real, before she resurfaces with you, and you see she is truly an angel here on earth. The words here are not written. Instead, they are spoken and echo through life's canyons to challenge our thinking stereotypes. Hear the words of a body mod extreme, tattooed, piercings. What do they all mean? Go inside the mind of a brain-damaged man. He stutters, he stammers. He hopes you'll understand. Communicate with a deaf and blind man. Hear his story. See his plight. Every day is silent. Every day is night. Speak to a homeless man. Go deep inside of his mind. His only true shelter from the unforgiving elements that 100 million people live within worldwide. Speak to a Muslim, a naturist, an HIV positive, someone molested, a polymorphous, a soldier with PTSD, a young mother, someone unemployed or with ADHD. Sit in the human library. Listen. See. There is so much more beyond the tattered covers. Read a bit more into humanity.
Wow. What a poem. Thanks so much for the SoundCloud there, Scott. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I've actually only just recently heard about the Human Library Project, and I thought it was an excellent take on the prompt, ignoring isn't the same as ignorance. You have to work at it. I've noticed that with the exception of niche groups, we as a society seek to homogenize humans rather than delve into the rich tapestry of human experience, and we're the poorer for it as a whole. I was drawn to this section here, books walking from the back room, sitting with you at your table, turning the pages of their lives, survivors, characters, having a dialogue with you. As someone with lived experience and mental illness, I personally have been affected by this homogenizing, this feeling of being looked past, seen as one causing too much drama or containing too much baggage. One need look beneath the hood, see that there are diamonds in the rough, and we could all benefit from looking beyond closed-mindedness and open our perspectives by walking in someone else's shoes, embarking on an opening of one's mind. I thought it was really nicely penned.
Wow, what a great comment. Yeah, I totally, almost left me speechless there again. I really like this one, too. Speak to a homeless man, go deep inside of his mind, his only true shelter from the unforgiving elements that 100 million people live within worldwide. Speak to a Muslim, a naturist, an HIV positive, someone molested, a polyamorous, a soldier with PTSD, a young mother, someone unemployed or with ADHD. Sit in the human library. Listen, see, there is so much more beyond the tattered covers. Read a bit more into medicine. In other words, a really strong offering on the Human Project, Human Library Project, and how it changes us, teaching empathy, opening our hearts and minds. Very moving. Okay, so what are you thinking now?
Well, we are getting, I've seen you put one on the board, and I've put one on the board too, so
yeah,
we will get to the end of the show,
okay.
But we have two more poems to go that were submitted as part of the contest. And this next one is written to the same prompt as the last poem. Ignoring isn't the same as ignorance. You have to work at it. It's by Ken Smith. I'll give this one a read. And it's called They Say Society No Longer. They say society no longer lives by a code. We've always had two choices, a yes or a no. We've always tested true or false. The binary system in computers comprised of zero and one, the alternating circuit in an electric current, the on and off in a light switch, two sounds in a wood drum made by different slits. The basic structure in poetry is based on binary, a stressed and unstressed syllable. Our two-pitched tongue need a need of opposites, the way a male and a female come together as one. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. Yeah, and that was prompt one. Ignoring isn't the same as ignorance. You have to work at it. And I enjoyed how Ken tied the theme of Atwood's dystopian world, a society built on the oppression of women, into the broader philosophical context of splitting, which is splitting is a psychological term for black and white thinking. And I thought it was excellent delivery, very well done. And your thoughts?
We actually have very similar interpretations of this poem. So I really enjoyed how he provided the concrete examples of duality, the end of two spectrums to represent the black and white thinking. I have to admit, I was a strong black and white thinker before the psychiatrist and psychologist got to me. So I used to be like that. But it is amazing how you can open your eyes to the spectrum of colors and the grays in life. And I was drawn to this section here. The basic structure in poetry is based on binary, a stressed and unstressed syllable. Our two-pitched tongue, a need of opposites. I very much enjoyed it.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, that is, for me as well, I grew up in a black and white world. And it's only this past, 4.5 years now that I've been consciously working on seeing shades of gray. And it's almost like the same old world seen through new eyes. So it's quite a journey, this other way of living. So nice. Okay. Where would you like to go now?
All right. So we've got Uma's poem. Uma 71, and if you could give this a read, that would be great.
Absolutely. Okay, so this is Uma 71. It's called Outreach, and it is inspired by prompt 6. A rat in a maze is free to go anywhere as long as it stays within the maze, as well as prompt 1. Ignoring isn't the same as ignorance. You have to work at it. So this is outreach. I believe in my garden, its limited span, and engrossing shallows of green. Everything from wild to cultivar, busily creating a maze of hedges, flower beds, perennial shrubs, and weeds getting lost into each other's arms. I am told I should go for a walk in the club on the track by the side of the locust farm and catch the flame of the forest bursting into an amazing fire, raining its crimson flowers with each flimsy breeze. But I have forgotten the once familiar path and lost the grip on the gate from where you can control your entry or exit into misadventure and enthusiasm. I just count my steps, 200 every day, from the mango tree in front to the lemon in my backyard. Every morning the sun descends like a gold casting on the emerald beads, a of my lawn, by this necklace I renew my vows. Stay within its confines, like a queen entrenched in a fortress of her own making. In the poem. Okay, Neutron, what'd you think of that one?
Look, I'm going to mention the prompts that it was written to, because I think that will provide some illumination for the readers. A rat in a maze is free to go anywhere as long as it stays inside the maze, and also ignoring isn't the same as ignorance. You have to work at it. And I think Uma has really captured that sense of being trapped in one's garden or in one's body, which fails us as we grow older. For me, this really resonated. I'm doing my own version of exposure therapy to overcome the things that have grown limbs in my head during the lockdowns and probably before that. It's probably why I survived lockdown so well, as I was a bit of a hermit before that. It's funny though, after being forced to be locked down, I've realized it prevents me from living a full life. And I think this poem, through my lens, encapsulates that. My favorite part was, every morning the sun descends like a gold casting on the emerald beads of my lawn. By this necklace I renew my vows to stay within its confines like a queen entrenched in a fortress of her own making. On a personal note, I think sometimes comfort can be a descending slope, and we have to break free of that comfort to exit the rat's maze. And I just thought it was an excellent answer to the chosen prompt.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I was struck by that same passage, so I won't repeat it, but I love how she shows through emotion and vivid imagery the enticing nature of our samsaric prison, how close the God realm seems to nirvana. What a very spiritual poem, and very well done. Okay, so I know that because it was just the two of us, I mean, we had Mark for a while. We've been burning through some poems here. and to be, a lot of them were brevity, so.
Yes.
That was hard,
yes.
Yeah.
So
okay,
it's
but I know
up to Amigo to spin this into another 15 minutes, unless Pam or Jeremy can put something on the board. I've seen them in the room. So if you're there, you're calling out, ladies, gents. But in the meantime, I was looking for something, and I found something I wrote 2 years ago. So it's probably going to be a little bit rawer. And it was written to the prompt, "Even ugliness looks beautiful close to you." So I thought it might be a good fit for the show. So I'm going to give this one a read, and then Richard, you can read yours, and then hopefully by that time we'll have somebody save us and put something on the board. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and just so you know, we do have a third poem by Scott Sharp if needed. No SoundCloud.
Oh,
that
excellent.
Third one, but, yep. So we got
that's
more.
All right. That's good. I'll bring that one up after your poem, and that might get us to the end of the show, I think. So. So this one's called Homicidal Inclinations. It takes 3 4-inch stab wounds to maim one's victim, or a rumor mill of loose tongues, helicopters, flags at the ready, sniper position scoped, bang, bang, I shot them down. A strangling, painfully visceral, vehicular, manslaughter, impersonal, frankly, a hammer to the head is worth 2 in the overgrowth. Homicidal Inclinations. Imagine all the people living life in pieces. Financial greed. Greed is good. Love is due to power. Powerful ideations, drinking cadmium, and willing the criminal masses to die. What motive shall see me 6 feet under? Criminal enterprise, ideology, the rough sex defense. Surely history demonstrates psychosis will not suffice, nor will a crime of passion. Best point to my risky behavior, victim blaming, slut shaming for shorter sentences. Manslaughter, not justifiable homicide. Inflame, incense the masses and modern day stoning. You possess the cowardice of Robert Ford. you cast the first stone, awaiting a pause. Notoriety is equally obtainable through ending with sham and the poem.
Wow, what a poem. So this is obviously my first read, normally I try and read these before the show. But I'm going to take a stab, pun intended, at it. It is quite dark. And I have to say, I think you're touching on something that sadly is universal. I think part of the human condition, at least if we're to believe Carl Jung, is this shadow that lurks within us all. And it has the capacity, if sublimated or if distorted somehow, it's not allowed to come out in a healthy way, like through creativity per se, or artistic expression, it can come out in a destructive way. And I think you've highlighted that quite well in this poem, that it is truly a poem of the shadow and homicidal inclinations that reside within all of us under the surface. And it's all a matter of what we do with them. If we live in fear and try and deny and suppress, then they can really become unruly. But if we allow them to see the light of day through creativity, as you actually ironically have done in this poem, then they can just transform and turn into something, you know, frightening, but also beautiful. So, great job. And if I'm dead wrong, you know, feel free to tell me.
No, actually, I think it's spot on, because when I first started writing, I was a bit of an angsty little fucker, that's for sure. So I think I was looking for an outlet, and a creative one at that. So I think your comment was spot on, especially in regards to the human condition, because I think given the right circumstances, everyone has homicidal inclinations. It's just whether they choose to act on them.
Yep. Cool. Great poem.
And on that note, Richard, I'm going to get you to read your poem, Reign of the Buckle Hat.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, I think, a really strong answer to Atwood's work. It tries to convey the struggle of an artist who is trying to communicate in a world of buckle-hatted censorship. And historically, just so the context is there, the Puritans wore hats that had buckles in them. That stated, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, it is also a person with censorious moral beliefs, especially about pleasure and sex. And it goes like this, called Reign of the Buckle Hat. Begin again. Despite writhing dog pain and lukewarm danger, continue. Wild whispering all the way to red-painted glory end. Not like beefy-eyed last try, nor like 100 times prior. Cold press on to Orwellian back alleyways until end, as our gray-headed fathers trained, fight mocking yellow glow of alarm clock, still reminding that we, all of us, are running low on our thoughts. Easy clothes, sea hazel eyes, tight shutter dimming mind that let drunk weekenders ruin bad shows. 'Cause all this was a long time coming, as escape hatching white night, cold sweep bleakly through river's airy blood, when mommy first brandied hail linen napkin for wailing infants to dull their pulsing pain, and our ilk still foot soldiered dream peddling escape with dim lit crude instruments, archaic by buckle-hatted standards. But we too washed dirty mid blanch hands, old story weaver imagining ourselves above this chaotic totalitarian fray, as we wrought iron framed virtue from cold ignorance and donned black leaping straitjackets of high art clay, never dreaming such labyrinths might backlash to present age's buckle-hatted dayness. End poem.
Wow, Richard. That was intense. I really enjoyed this piece. The thought of having to pick this apart on just listening to that right now has got me buckling in my boots, but I'll give it a go. So I was drawn to this section here, cold pressed onto Orwellian back alleyways until end as our grey-headed father's train spite mocking yellow glow of alarm clocks, still reminding that we, all of us, are running low on hours. That firstly, I just have to say, your phrasing is spectacular. The fact that you wrote this 2 years ago, I will say, when I look at my stuff 2 years ago, there's a big difference. But you've been writing a lot longer, and I can definitely tell by reading this because it's synonymous with the quality of the writing you do today also. You do get that feel of self-flagellation almost, and I'm just going to refer to the line here, don the black weeping straitjackets of high art clay, never dreaming such labyrinths might backlash to present age's buckle-hatted daymares. In all seriousness, but the thing that it reminds me of is what you're going through in the U.S. at the moment in some of the states with the reissuing of problematic laws when it comes to a woman's right to her own body with the abortion laws and whatnot. And it just goes to show, I suppose, that it doesn't matter what time or in history you go to, there is in some respect this lack of autonomy over one's body as a female. And generally speaking, like just going back to what you said about Margaret Atwood and that first clip that you played, she hasn't made all of this up. This has happened throughout history. She's used historic accuracy to convey the punishments that were part of her Handmaid's Tale. And I just think this was a fitting way to effectively see out the show. Very well done.
Thanks, Neutron. Yeah, absolutely. By the way, your comment is spot on. This was written 2 years ago. It was written primarily thinking about the Trump era, the rolling back of the clock. I think that there was this kind of false sense of liberalism and of the triumph of reason, the triumph of morality, the triumph of empathy. And I think that there was an overestimation, in my opinion, when Obama became president, that racism was a thing of the past and sexism was a thing of the past. And this poem was really addressing that we, the creative people of that kind of university culture, we imagined ourselves above this chaotic totalitarian fray, and we're blindsided by this backlash that we're currently experiencing in the United States and, to lesser extent in other countries as well. So that's it's almost like that Who song, "We Won't Get Fooled Again." And unfortunately, we're still going through it, and it just seems like it might be getting a little bit worse, unfortunately, before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have to be a bit of an optimist despite everything we're experiencing with Trumpism and Putin and all that. I still have to believe that despite whatever short-term, reversion to authoritarianism, that we'll wake up and we won't end up in the middle of that buckle-headed nightmare. So anyway, that's my hope. I think as opposed to trying to rush to do another poem, maybe what I'll do is just give some thanks and talk about what's coming up. And I know in a half an hour that Pam's show is coming up. So that's at 12:30 Eastern. And that is always worth tuning into. It is always some dynamite poetry. And we encourage our listeners to join Pam in a half an hour. In addition, I know that tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern, we've got Fill My Eyes with Poetry's open poetry reading. And feel free to drop a poem. It doesn't have to be on any particular topic, just anything you would like to have read on air. Give a call into that show, too, because that is another just dynamite evening of poetry. And then finally, I want to give a shout out to Mark. It was wonderful having him. His comments are always spot on. He has just tremendous insight into the canon as well as insights regarding poetry itself. So very much appreciated to have his voice. And then lastly, it was just wonderful having you back, Neutron. Glad to have you in good health again. And
yes.
You were sorely missed. So
I got my blood test back today, and they're all coming back good. So that's brilliant.
Excellent. I haven't necessarily decided what's next, but we'll figure out something good. And I wanted to give a shout out to Fill My Eyes for her help in the background. She always makes these shows run so smoothly. She helps us with the SoundCloud, and they do provide a wonderful mechanism, is the ability for the poet to be heard in their own voice. And then lastly, I want to thank everyone who writes for these shows every 2 weeks. Over and over again, they truly show us their creativity, give us their best, and it is much appreciated. Without them, there truly is no show. So I think that's about it. We made the 2 hours.
Finally, just one last thing. Check out the contest page for all of the contests on All Poetry on the Late Night Poets Forum. We are always looking for rights for all the shows.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, and they are always inspiring contests, so please do that. And, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk privately, Neutron, and try and figure out how we want to order the contest winners and what we want to do coming tomorrow night. And with that, I'll close it out.
Thanks, Richard.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good night. Okay, bye.
You too. Bye.